You're listening to WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
Check, check, one, two. Look like a little country. Some rock and roll and blues. Cause we sure love playing for good people like you. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.
Welcome to Music Local and Sustainable, the radio show that features discussions with and the music of local musicians. I am your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I have Harry O'Donohue, Savannah's master Irish folk singer, storyteller, and songwriter. And he will be performing at the First Friday for Folk Music on Friday, January 2nd at the First Presbyterian Church, Stewart Hall, 520 Washington Avenue, here in Savannah. Welcome to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, Harry O'Donohue.
O'Donohue, as we say. Thank you very much, Dave. Nice to be here.
So let's get to know Harry O'Donohue. Tell me your musical journey.
My musical journey? Well, we could put it in a nutshell. I was a late starter, I think, as things go when I look at young prodigies now that start playing music very young. I bought my first guitar when I was 20 years old and started playing at folk masses back in my hometown of Drogheda, which is about 35 miles north of Dublin on the east coast of Ireland, on the banks of the River Boyne. I started playing folk masses, and from that I got bitten by the bug, I suppose. There were about 8 or 10 of us. A lot of very, very good musicians, good harmony singers and good instrumentalists, none of which was I. But yeah, I was still in the fold. And shortly thereafter, a couple of us just started playing. Actually, one of the first gigs we played back home was for the Irish Wheelchair Association. And then it kind of morphed into local folk things and playing when a band would take a break. Two of us would sing a few folk songs and then into a kind of a bona fide part-time band, and I took up the bass guitar, which I don't play very well either, but I got away with it. So that was the musical journey around my hometown. Then one of the priests in the Augustinian church got reposted to Buena Park, California. So my sister had been to visit second cousins of Philadelphia back in 79. So three of us saved enough money to come over and spend a couple of months here in the States, starting in Philadelphia and going out to California. That was kind of it for me. I really liked America. And when in California, we went into an Irish club there, brought in by the priest, no less. But that's another discussion. And we were asked, would we play part-time there? So we did, and went back to Philadelphia and then came back out the next year and played in California and Philadelphia. I've been in America ever since. Sold my house in Ireland in 1985. And our journey took us from Philly all around the country, playing different pubs and clubs around America. And one of my cousins from Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Moonies, moved down here and was living here in the Savannah area in Tybee Island. And after our first venture into the recording studio in late 82, early 83, she had been up on vacation, and although I don't remember her from the time I was in Ireland, I was too young, she did extend an invitation to come down and spend some time. The weather was nicer here in March and April, and we did that. And she also gave us the number of a local Irish bar here, that was Kevin Barry's. So in April 83, when we finished recording in Philly, we made our way down the road and played in Kevin Barry's Irish pub. And that was my first gig there, and subsequently went on to play 36 years standing on that stage.
And so you started with a folk mass.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a Catholic mass.
Yes.
Where you played folk music instead of the normal liturgy.
Yes, it was a priest by the name of Jim Kiley, Father Kiley. He was very progressive at the time. And again, trying to open a window for more young people to come to Mass. So he would have us at the rehearsals pick appropriate songs, but kind of folk or very light pop songs. And we would furnish him with the lyrics. And then he would fashion his sermon around the lyrics of the song. It was very progressive at the time in the 70s.
Yeah, I would say, because I always think of Ireland as being conservative when it comes to religion. And it would be United States where you'd maybe California, where you'd see a folk mass. So that's really surprises me.
Yeah, that's where it kind of started doing that. And it's interesting. I found an interesting journey that we would end up in America and subsequently I work on cruises. And I've been lucky enough to perform here in Savannah with the Philharmonic on several occasions and concerts. So it's been a very, very interesting journey.
And so you initially came to the United States, your band. Was that Terra Nova?
Yes. Terra Nova was formed in Holland in 1979, where my friend Jerry Mulroy, who's still friends and he still sings. I just posted up a video of a new song. It was not written by him, but performed by him, Yes, I Have Fallen. It's on my Facebook page. Really great stuff. Jerry, his sound, he's a mix between Randy Travis and James Taylor, and very deft and beautiful touch on the guitar. So we were working as electricians. We're both electricians in a small town called Oosterhout in Holland in 1979. Our contract was a 3-month contract. And the town is south of a bigger city of Breda, which is south of Amsterdam. Anyway, there were 14 Irish tradesmen over on that contract in this small village. It was a cement factory. They made cement beams for high-rise buildings. And the weather was particularly bad that winter. So instead of us having to work shift work, which was the original plan, because the canals had frozen over, they didn't have enough material. So they put us all on day work. So we worked from 8 to 5 and left the nights free. And there were 14 of us, and we were young and raucous, and we had some guitar. So we ended up playing, Jerry and myself ended up playing in a pub called the Pub 300 every Tuesday night. That was when the core of the band was formed. And my girlfriend came over at the time. She played keyboards and sang harmony. So when we went back to Ireland, we had the nucleus of the group formed and entered an international music competition in Dublin, where we won the folk section. We did not consider ourselves folk musicians at the time. We just played music.
You won the music prize in folk music, but you didn't consider yourself a folk band.
We didn't really, I suppose. You know, when you look at it, Dave, we played folk masses. That should have been a clue. But then when we were, the band was called Harmony. I played bass. So we were playing kind of poppy tunes at the time. It's like calling people traditional musicians. There's an expectation that comes with that. So when my solo career took off, or when Trish had left the band, I continued. And it was Irish music that was, because it wasn't jigs and reels, it was considered either ballads or folk. And the name kind of stuck. And then when I started writing more songs, I used the word contemporary, like a contemporary songwriter, whatever that means. And of course, these things mean different things to different people. So that name always stuck. That title always stuck in the folk singer. And that was the beginning of the Terra Nova thing. And we were the ones who came to America with that name.
So the members of Terra Nova were?
There was Trin O'Mahony, originally myself, and Jerry Mulroy. And over the course of 3 or 4 years or 5 years, there were different members. Jerry, when we were here in America, he took off to Honolulu with his girlfriend at the time, who also sang. And then they went back to Ireland. He subsequently got a job as an electrician over in Saudi Arabia. And then we had Joe Matthews, who was also at school with us, and he was one of the original members of the folk mass. He played piano and accordion, and he was with us for a year. So there were different people. And then Trish Rogers was my main partner, I think. She joined in, I think it was 82 to 86. That saw the end of the group. And it was with Trish that we were signed with Polygram Records in Ireland. And we thought we were going to be the next big thing, and we weren't.
So common is that story.
Yes, indeed, yes. So I think we did our last official gig was in the church, in the cathedral up in Augusta, Georgia. It's an art center. It's a deconsecrated cathedral. And we performed our last concert together in that venue. And that was around about, I want to say 86 or so, 86, maybe 87. And I've been a solo act since.
And were you in Savannah at that point?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I had moved down to Savannah from Philly. I was here permanently in 85. It was given the fact that the weather conditions in Philadelphia and in the northern cities were, in the wintertime, a lot less friendly than they are down here. And we were traveling. So we were working down in Florida, Key West, and Houston, Texas, St. Louis, Wilmington, Delaware, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C. So it didn't really matter, you know, where you lived. And as I remember, Kevin Barry's Irish Pub here in town was having difficulty getting acts to come down, or Irish acts, authentic acts to come down from the Northeast. So we ended up playing a lot of time here. We were almost a house band, which further prompted our move down here.
Tonight on Savannah Music, Local and Sustainable, I have Harry O'Donohue. And so when you moved down here, it was actually relatively soon after you moved down here, it sounds like the band broke up.
A couple of years, yeah. 2.5 years. It was after the signing, and I cannot remember that man's name. He signed us to the Polygram Records, Polydor record label, and he had signed a band called Bagatelle. The lead singer of the band Bagatelle was Liam Riley, and he subsequently lived here in Savannah. We had met him in Philly. He produced our first two albums, and he came down to live down here in Savannah with us. And around that time, the second album he produced, he sent over to this man, again, his name escapes me, in Dublin. And that's how we were signed to Polydor Records. Unfortunately, what happened then was the gentleman retired and we got thrown out with the bathwater. They did honour the contract and they released the album, and there was to be a single released. We jokingly say the single Escape rather than the release. They put no money behind it, so the whole thing was a complete failure. And that was more or less the end of us as a duo and a group. Trish had really had enough at that point in time. So she went on to different ventures.
Now, the album that is available that you can still get from Terra Nova called The Recordings?
Yes, they are the two albums that we recorded. The first one was called Come a Little Closer, and the second was Where'er I Wander. So some years ago, I think maybe 10 years ago now, I took those recordings. The original recordings were lost, but I did have copies of the albums, of the actual records, two copies that had never been played. So we transferred them to tape and did some magic work here with Phil Hadaway up in, it was Real Time Studios at the time. And from that, we got one long CD. And I think there's only one track is omitted from both recordings. And that's Terra Nova, the recordings on CD.
Not being a really devotee of Irish music, not knowing it well, to me, Irish music, it was folk music and ballads. I mean, that's the perfect description of how I would describe it. But I bet you I kept moving back and forth songs from one category to another because there would be songs that I would think would be timeless, but turns out they were probably written just 20, 30 years ago. And on the other hand, there are songs on your live album, for instance, you have a song, The Foggy Dew, and that is really about, I think, the Irish Rebellion, the Easter Rebellion. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's traditional.
What would be considered a traditional ballad. Very much so. The Foggy Dew. I always knew this as a marching song from Dublin about the uprising, you know. And I remember Sinead O'Connor recorded this. Sinead did it, sounded like a funeral march, you know. down the glen one Easter morn to a city fair rode I. Their armed lines of marching men in squadrons they passed me by. No pipes did hum, no battle drum did sound its loud tattoo, but the Angela's bell or the Liffey swell rang out in the foggy dew. The ballads, to me, tend to be possibly older, and their origin is somewhat uncertain. Like, there's a song called The Star of the County Down. Banbridge town in the county down on a morning last July, down a boring green came a sweet Colleen. She smiled as she passed me by. She looked so sweet from her two bare feet to the sheen of her nut brown hair. Such a coaxing elf, I shook myself for the sea, was she really there? From Bantry Bay to Derry Kay and from Galway to Dublin town, no maid I've seen like the sweet Colleen that I met in the county down. From Bantry Bay to Derry Kay and from Galway to Dublin town, no maid I've seen like the sweet Colleen I met in the county down, that I met in the county down, that I met in the county down. And it's been recorded in so many styles and variations. And I remember the great Irish balladeer Danny Doyle from Dublin, who played here in Savannah, and it was a great joy in my life to know him and to have him become a friend, because I watched him on TV in Ireland when I was growing up. But Danny came along one time, and he was typical Dublin, had a great wit and attitude. So he was singing this song. I said, Danny, that's the Star of the County Down. Oh, no, Harry, it's called The Flower of County Down. And he had different lyrics. And I said, I never heard that version before. He said, yes, I know. That's the original, Harry. And, of course, whether that's true or not is beside the point. But a lot of these songs did morph, and they have done so in Ireland and, of course, here in the States. So we don't know where the original came from. And if it's sung in a certain part of Ireland, they'll use local village and town names or local names of people if it pertains to personalities in the song. And that's quite common, I think, with ballad and folk music, but ballads especially. And we had, of course, the broadside ballads in London in the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, broadside sheets. And ballads were written on them. So the word and the art form goes back, I think, longer than folk music.
Well, and the song that is often a American Irish pub name, Molly Malone, I put also in that more traditional category.
It is. Again, the origin of Molly Malone is sketchy. I have no information on where or when it came to be, and it's yeah, very much another ballad about people. But I think if you want to categorize them, both ballads and folk songs they're cultural songs. And for instance, with the penal laws in Ireland back in the 1600s, 1700s, the Irish were not allowed education. So a lot of the culture was handed down in that form, in song, and of course in Shanachie, the storytellers that went around the country, and they held the culture of the country together in story and song. It's very fascinating to me, and it does blend in with some of the written forms, because we have broadsheet ballads going back to the 1600s, 1700s also, especially in England. The Irish were not allowed that. So it's interesting how things would change and a song would morph into several different variants. Molly Malone is considered to be one of the great Dublin ballads. In Dublin's fair city, where the girls are so pretty, I first set my eyes on Molly Malone. She wheeled a wheelbarrow through streets broad and narrow, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh. Alive, alive, oh. Alive, alive, oh. Cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh. Alive, alive, oh. Alive, alive, oh. Cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh.
Tonight on Savannah Music, Local and Sustainable, I have Harry O'Donohue. And so when we talk about Irish music, I started talking about the ballad and the traditional ballad, but there's a lot of new music too that comes out of Ireland. And for someone who, like me, is not that knowledgeable, I sort of mix them all together. Do you find that that's common among, say, Americans who are listening to Irish music?
Yes, David. It's really common with everybody. For instance, the most popular, what I would call traditional Irish band, but she offers more than a band, it's a show. It's a woman named Joni Madden from New York. She has a band called Cherish the Ladies, and it was formed in New York, just all ladies. Now, at this point in time, she has incorporated male dancers from the Ottawa Valley in Canada, and she offers more of a show. But Joni herself has a couple of albums out. She got two albums there. She won a Grammy. And she continues to write traditional Irish music. Like, one of our famous tunes is called The Cat's Meow. But that music does blend in with the older music. And if you hear, we spoke about the Star of the County Down. Well, that's also performed as a song and a tune. And so The Cat's Meow and tunes like that are still being written. And it's very, very hard to discern whether they're old or new. Songs are a little different. You know, some songs, the material aspect of the song or the subject material of the song might be a little bit more modern than the older songs. Of course, the older songs were originally about people, personalities in local townships or events. Like The Rising of the Moon is about the 1798 rebellion in Wexford, in the southeast of Ireland. That's very much a story song, a history song about event. There's other songs about people. Dan O'Hara, the matchmaker, who ended up losing most of his family on the journey over and ended up sending matchbooks in New York, in America. And that's based on a true story. So they're older kind of history songs. And of course, you mentioned The Foggy Dew, which is a 1920s song of rebellion from Dublin. And then you move into different songs, of course, songs of partying and whiskey and jigs and reels. And we just lost the songwriter Shane McGowan from the Pogues. And he will go down in history as one of the great Irish poets and songwriters. One of his big songs that he just played 3 or 4 days ago at his funeral in the church in Nina in Tipperary was called The Fairy Tale of New York. It's a Christmas song.
It was Christmas Eve, babe, in the drunk tank, an old man said to me, won't see another one. And then he sang a song, the rare old mountain tune. I turned my face away and dreamed about you. Got on a lucky one, came in 18 to 1. I've got a feeling this year's for me and you. So happy Christmas, I love you baby, I can see a better time when all our dreams come true.
They got cars big as bars, they got rivers of gold, but the wind goes right through you, it's no place for the old. When you first took my hand on a cold Christmas Eve, you promised me Broadway was waiting for me.
You were pretty queen of New York City.
When the band finished playing, they held out for more. Sinatra was swinging, all the jokes they were singing. We kissed on the corner, then danced through the night. The boys of the NYPD choir were singing, go away, babe. And the bells were ringing out for Christmas Day.
That boat.
You scumbag, you maggot, cheap, cheap, lousy faggot. Happy Christmas, you're ours, I pray God it's our love.
The boys of the NYPD choir still singing, go away, babe. And the bells are ringing out for Christmas Day.
I could have been someone. I kept them with me, babe. I put them with my own. Can't make it all alone. I built my dreams around you.
The boys of the NYPD chorus are singing, go away, babe. And the bells are ringing out for Christmas Day.
So that's a little bit more modern, and you certainly get the more modern vibe from a band like the Pogues. There is a big argument or a big divide, as there is here in America, about what tradition and what traditional music means, and whether we are obliged to keep it traditional in its sound and its quality, or to let it move and breathe along with younger musicians who still embrace the art form but want to, you know, want to change it because their sensibilities are more modern. And that's really an argument I don't have a lot of skin in, because I'm not an instrumentalist per se.
This is WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with Global Soul.
You're listening to WRUU, your local radio station, for people just like you, hosted by people from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and others from the Savannah and Lowcountry area. In other words, WRUU is your community radio station. Please help us by donating whatever you can to help your neighbors and friends stay on the air. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station. Any amount is welcomed. Thank you for your support of WRUU.
This portion of WRUU's programming is brought to you by listeners like you and by the American Traditions Collection of Concerts, featuring on Saturday, January 13th at 6:30 p.m., a salon concert with the 2016 American Traditions Vocal Competition Gold Medalist and Aladdin on Broadway, Michael Malekill. More information and tickets are available at atcsavannah.org. This music is often called classical music, but remember, Mozart, Beethoven, and Liszt were the rock stars of their time, so I simply call it great music. I'm your host, Dave Lake, and join me for four centuries of great music, with new episodes each week on Sundays from 3 to 5 p.m. We also have encores of these episodes on Saturdays from 3 to 5 p.m. from mid-June to early December. Welcome back to Music Local and Sustainable, and I'm your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I have Harry O'Donohue, Savannah's master Irish folk singer, storyteller, and songwriter. And he will be performing at the First Friday for Folk Music on Friday, January 2nd at the First Presbyterian Church, Stewart Hall, 520 Washington Avenue, here in Savannah. One of the reasons we're chatting today is in 2 weeks Friday, you're going to be performing as part of the First Friday Folk Music series, and that is at the First Presbyterian Church here in town. In a show like that, what sort of songs are you going to be singing? Because, I mean, it is a folk venue, but many people probably like me see everything as folk, so you can probably sing anything. But as we've been talking about, there's a wide range of songs. There's love songs, there's historic songs, there's songs about individuals, these story songs about individuals. There are songs about events, whether they're hilarious or most often you find quite funny songs about events. I mean, on your, it's your live album, Live and Just as Well. And there's a song, Delaney's Donkey, which is about an event, a race, but it is hilarious. So there's these wide variety of different songs that you can choose from. How do you pick and choose when you do a set?
It's always a difficult choice. It was much easier when I worked in bar setting where you did 3 one-hour sets. You went through a lot of material, so it was never a problem. But trying to condense it down can be problematic. I generally, Dave, will make a big list. I have a good idea of, I've been doing this for a long time, so trial and error. But the one thing you don't want to do is bore people. So you don't want to do too many slow songs. It's like music for insomniacs here. So pacing is very important. And everybody who's been on stage knows about pacing. Played the third time with the Folk Society, and I cannot remember whether there's going to be an intermission or not.
There generally is, yeah.
Okay, so you know, you go into an intermission and you go into the end of a performance, always as the old showbiz adage is, leave them wanting more. You leave the audience up if you can. So you keep that in mind. You know, you generally don't start with a song where everybody gets killed. This is not a good beginning. So you try and start with something in the middle of the road, and you can move around a little bit. I've written some poetry in the last, I don't know, couple of years. Nothing much, you know, but so what I do is I preface at least one song with a poem. And that lifts the setup a little bit. And then I play the Irish skin drum, the Bowron, which when you present something like that on stage, it's not only an assault to the ears, but it's something visually different. So to me, I'm trying to hit on several points to bring the Irish sensibility to the stage. And humour is part of that. I have routines of jokes and humorous things that I inject into the performance. Irish people are witty. And there is this tragic comedy thing that goes on. I use it a lot when I work on ships. So if I do a routine that's humorous and then I go into a song, people almost expect the song to be humorous, to follow in the same line. And there's a shock value, I suppose, into the aspect that it's not. Not only is it not humorous, but it's quite deep in its essence. So it can be a roller coaster, but that's true life in many sense, in many places, and in for all of us. So that's what I try to bring to my performance. And I'll change depending on the mood of the audience. If something like, if the audience is a little bit more buoyant, I can throw in Delaney's Donkey. But it takes a little bit of introduction to get the full value of the song. And this is one of those songs that people like me growing up, because, you know, we're teenagers, you're young, or you're in your early 20s, and you're just, this is hokey stuff. This is, are you kidding me? This is like, I'm not doing this. And it wasn't until I started writing songs myself and found a copy. I was playing in Charlottesville, Virginia, in a club called WW O'Toole's. And during the day, I was in a record store, and I found a cassette tape of this man, Val Dunican, who was from Ireland, from either Waterford or Wexford, made it very, very big in England when I was a kid. And he had a TV show, and he wore these Aran sweaters and Aran cardigans. And he had a pension. He would sit in a stool and sing these beautiful songs, but then throw in these weird things. The Day Delaney's Donkey Ran the Half Mile Race, and Paddy McGinty's Goat. And they're like hokey songs. But going back to when I started writing songs and looked at these songs again, looked at the lyric and the content, I said, this is so cleverly written. This is such a clever song. And the use of language is very innovative as well. So I immediately added that to my repertoire.
Delaney had a donkey that everyone admired. Temporarily lazy, permanently tired. A leg at every corner, balancing its head. And a tail to let you know which end it wanted to be fed. Riley slyly said, we've underrated it. Why not train it? Then they took a rag, they rubbed it, scrubbed it, oiled and imbricated it. Got it to the post, and when the starter dropped the flag, there was Riley pushing it, shoving it and shushing it. Hogan, Logan, everyone in town lined up attacking it, shoving it and smacking it. They might as well have tried to push the town hall down. The donkey was eyeing them, openly defying them, winking, blinking, twisting out of place. Riley reversing it, everybody cursing it. The Day Delaney's Donkey ran the half mile race. Now the muscles of the mighty, never known to flinch, couldn't move the donkey a quarter of an inch. And Delaney lay exhausted, hanging round its throat, with a grip just like a Scotsman on a 5-pound note. Starter Carter lined it with the rest of them. When it saw them, it was willing then. It raced up, braced up, ready for the best of them. They started off to cheer it, but the change is mine again. And there was Riley, pushing it, shoving it and shushing it. Hogan, Logan, Mary Ann McGrath, she started poking it, grabbing it and choking it. They kicked her in the bustle and it laughed, hee-ha. The Whigs and Conservatives, the Radical Superlatives, Liberals and Tories, hurry to the place, joined up in unity, helping the community. The Day Delaney's Donkey ran the half-mile race. Well, the crowd began to cheer it, and Rafferty the judge, he came up to assist him, still it wouldn't budge, and the jockey who was riding it, little John McGee, was so thoroughly disgusted that he went and had his tea. Hagen, Fagen, students of psychology, swore they'd shifted with some dynamite. They bought it, brought it, then without apology, the donkey gave a sneeze that blew the whole lot out of sight. And there was Riley, pushing it, shoving it and shushing it, Hogan, Logan, all the bally crew, police and artillery, the garrison artillery, the second and the skillings and the lifeguards too. They seized it and harried it, they picked it up and carried it, cheered it, steered it to the winning place. Then the bookmakers drew aside, and they all committed suicide. The day Delaney's donkey won the half mile race.
Well, that's true of many of the songs across all of the different categories, I guess, of Irish music, is that the songs are very well written. I mean, in terms of use of language, mm-hmm. use of metaphor.
Yes. There are some wonderful songs. One of my favorite songwriters in Ireland, I've mentioned, of course, Danny Doyle, and one of his peers was Jim McCann. And Jim, strange it might seem, Jim McCann, one of the golden voices in Irish music, he died of throat cancer. It's just so ironic. But he sings some songs. There's a song called Sleave na Mon, which is a Tipperary song. And the lyric is just beautiful. And another one called The Snowy-Breasted Pearl. If you ever get a chance to listen to the song, it's delightful.
There's a calling fair as May, for a year and for a day. I have sought by every way her heart to gain. There's no art of tongue or eye, fond youths with maidens try. But I've tried with ceaseless sigh, yet tried in vain. If to far off France or Spain she crossed the raging main, her face to see again, the seas I brave. But if 'tis heaven's decree that mine she may not be, may the Son of Mary me in mercy save. Not ever thus reprove my constancy. There are maidens would be mine, with wealth in land and kind, if my heart would but incline to turn from thee. But a kiss with welcome bland, and a touch of thy fair hand, is all that I demand, wouldst thou not spurn? For if not mine, dear girl, O snowy-breasted pearl, may I never from the fair with life return.
But the melodies are very strong, very catchy melodies. Some of these songs, not all, but some of these songs are on my playlist, along with the Jimmy Buffetts, God rest his soul, and the Bob Marleys and the Beatles and stuff. And you'll get Jim McCann coming in with Grace or I Love the Ground She Walks Upon. It's just stunning. It sometimes it stops me in my tracks. It's just, who wrote this? This is just beautiful stuff. And I'm in great agreement with you there. So some of the material I've learned over the years do have that quality. And I'd like to say some of my own songs have that quality, but that remains to be seen or heard.
Well, one of the ones that immediately comes to mind is a song, again, it's from your live album, Live and Just As Well, and it's The Voyage.
Yes.
The whole song is a metaphor of a relationship, of a marriage.
It's a song that's been very kind to me for many years, and it's a song that I do regularly on cruise ships, and it's a song that sold a lot of CDs for me, written by Johnny Doohan. And Johnny is from Limerick. I've never met him. We did correspond by email several times when I was paying royalties. And instead of paying through an agency, which you can do, Harry Fox up in New York, I have had friends of mine research myself and find the person or persons. In some cases, you can do it. Some cases, you can. With Irish musicians, you can. There's easier accessibility than there are to American musicians. So I get a hold of Johnny, and the royalties is not a lot, but I sent him over money. He said, send her over in dollars. He said, the wife is going to America, and she'll have a couple of martinis. So I did. It's a beautiful song, and it's a song that is very thought-provoking. The Voyage.
Because line after line after line is just so perfect.
It's incredible. Life is an ocean, and love is a boat. I mean, just that alone. Life is an ocean, love is a boat. It's incredible. It's a wonderful song, yeah. Very, very good song. I suppose I best put that on the list.
I'm sure everybody will enjoy it.
I'm a sailor, and you're my first mate. We signed on together, we coupled our fates. Hauled up our anchors, determined not to fade. For the heart's treasures, together we say. With no maps to guide us, we steered our own course. Rode out the storms when the winds were gale force. We sat down with the doldrums in patience and hope. Working together, we learned how to cope. Life is an ocean, love is a boat. In troubled waters, it keeps us afloat. When we started the voyage, there was just me and you. Now, gathered round us, we have our own crew. Together we're in this relationship. We've built it with care for to last the whole trip. Our true destination, not marked on the charts. We We're navigating for the shores of the heart. Life is an ocean, and love is a boat. In troubled waters, it keeps us afloat. When we started the voyage, there was just me and you. Now, gathered round us, we have our own crew. Life is an ocean, and love is a boat. In troubled waters, it keeps us afloat. When we started the voyage, there was just me and you. Now, gathered round us, we have our own crew.
Tonight on Savannah Music, Local and Sustainable, I have Harry O'Donohue. And then there's the, again, very well written, I'll say silly song, but silly almost implies simplicity, when indeed these humorous songs are some of the most intricately written as well. And if you really pay attention to the lyrics carefully, you'll be amazed how well they're written. I mean, we've talked about Delaney's Donkey, uh-huh. which is a fabulous song. And another one that pops to mind that's sort of a silly song, but again, if you look at the lyrics, they're really, really insightful. And that is The Old Dun Cow.
The Old Dun Cow?
Yeah.
The Old Dun Cow. Yeah, it's not very clever. That's another song that's been very kind to me in bars. It's an audience participation song. And The Old Dun Cow is a bar. The word dun, D-O-N-N or D-U-N-N, is an Irish word for brown. So the name of the place was The Old Brown Cow, The Old Dun Cow.
Yeah, The Old Dun Cow. I don't want to give it away, but it's a hot time in the old town tonight.
Yes. Yes, yeah. And it's a very popular audience participation piece. I've gotten a lot of requests for that on a regular basis through the years. Actually, both of those songs, yeah.
Some friends and I in a public house playing dominoes one night. Went into the bar, the barman came, his face all chalky white. What's up, says Brown, have you seen a ghost? Have you seen my Aunt Mariah? Oh, your Aunt Mariah, be Jesus, is he? The bloody pub's on fire. A fire, says Brown, what a bit of luck, everybody follow me. Down to the cellar, if the fire's not there, so we'll have a grand old spree. So we all went down with good old Brown, there the booze was free. And we hadn't been 5 minutes there when we were drunk and disorderly. And there was Brown, upside down, lapping up the whiskey from the floor. Booze, booze, the firemen cried as they came a-knocking on the door. They came a-knocking on the door. Well, don't let them in till it's all lapped up. Somebody shouted, McIntyre. And we all got stone blind, paralytic, drunk when the old Dun Cow got fired. The lady went down to a poured wine tub, gave it a few hard knocks. Then he started taking off his pantaloons, likewise his shoes and socks. Hold on, says Brown, you can't do that, you can't do that down here. No, you can't wash your trotters in a port wine tub when there's plenty of stale beer. And there was Brown, upside down, lapping up the whiskey from the floor. Booze, booze, the firemen cried as they came a-knocking on the door. Ah, they came a-knocking on the door. Well, don't let them in till it's all lapped up. Somebody shouted, McIntyre. And we all got stone blind, paralytic, drunk when the old Dun Cow caught fire. Just then there came an awful crash, half the bloody roof gave way. We were almost drowned with a fireman's hose, but we were feeling gay. So up went the blocks and the old tin tacks, we locked ourselves inside. And we sat there drinking pints of beer till we were bleary-eyed. And there was Brown, upside down, lapping up the whiskey from the floor. Booze, booze, the fireman cried as they came a-knocking on the door. Ah, they came a-knocking on the door. Well, don't let them in till it's all lapped up. Somebody shouted, McIntyre. And we all got stone blind, paralytic, drunk when the old Dunkoo got fire. And there was Brown, upside down, lapping up the whiskey from the floor. Booze, booze, the fireman cried as they came a-knocking on the door. Ah, they came a-knocking on the door. Well, don't let them in till it's all lapped up. Somebody shouted, McIntyre. And we all got stone blind, paralytic, drunk when the old Dunkoo caught fire.
When you have such a wealth of songs to choose from and a wealth of different subgenres, can you get out of a set without doing a drinking song, for instance?
No, that's a short answer. I have done, and I'm just at this point in my career. It's like, Dave, when I came to Savannah first, coming down here, especially in the 80s, it was different down here, the 80s and 90s. And it remains different. So you, when I was performing down here, I would not play as many quote-unquote rebel Irish songs. Very, very popular up in the Northeast. But the connection was stronger in the Northeast. So people were still coming from Ireland and going to those places on a regular basis. A lot of people who came to Savannah from Ireland, at one point it there weren't as many. I'm not going to say it stopped, but there certainly weren't as many. So those songs were very, very popular and would not be as popular down here. So it just depends on your audience. What I'm trying to do now, and I go back to the drinking songs, in performance in a concert situation, I always was very dismissive of these type of songs. The silly song, the rebel song, and the drinking song. And that, in retrospect, may have been a mistake. And now I'm starting to add, though, there's a place in the great landscape of Irish music for traditional jigs and reels and slip jigs and half jigs and all that kind of stuff. The old ballad, the ballads and the songs, Os Gaeilge in the Irish language, the almost spoken songs, and the rebel songs, the drinking songs and humour songs. And so for a complete performance, to me now, I need to add something in that category to get the whole experience. You can't get up there and just sing your own songs or cherry pick the songs you like. You have to be really aware of why the audience is coming to the performance. And the audience is coming, yes, for the artist, but also for the music that the artist brings. And they want to hear certain things. They expect to hear certain things. And their view on, again, quote-unquote Irish music may be limited to just to what they are familiar with or what they like. And it's always fun to also broaden the scope of their experience, if you can do it.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I've been talking with Harry O'Donohue. He is a master Irish folk singer, storyteller, and songwriter. And he will be performing at the First Friday for Folk Music on Friday, January 5th at the First Presbyterian Church, Stewart Hall, 520 Washington Avenue, here in Savannah. And you'll be featured in two sets with an intermission, and they'll be beginning at 7:30. And Harry O'Donohue, I want to thank you so very much for being on the show tonight.
My pleasure, Dave. Thank you for the invitation.
This has been another edition of Music Local and Sustainable, and I've been your host, Dave Lake. Save this time for another show next week.
Well, I know we ain't headed for the Hall of Fame. Gonna give it what we got, man, it ain't no shame. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.